Now we'll shift gears a little bit. That was the crime. That was some of the evidence from the crime. Now we're going to talk about the chief suspects and the background. I used to live in Israel in the 1970s, and I studied a lot of Zionist history. That's my degree is in Israel and Palestine. And when I lived in Israel in 1975 and 1976, in 1976, these men came to power. This is Menachem Begin, a well-known terrorist who bombed the King David Hotel and committed a lot of crimes, wanted by the British, wanted by the Russians before he even left Russia. He was a criminal in Russia. Then he went to Palestine, was a criminal, international criminal. And at one point, he was interviewed in Israel, and they said, somebody said, how does it feel to be considered the founder of terrorism in the Middle East? He says, in the Middle East, in the whole world. So he considers himself to be the father of terrorism in the whole world. This man here is Yitzhak Shamir. He's a real thug from Belarus. He was involved in such crimes like the murder of Lord Moyne. He was the head of a gang called the Stern Gang. He was the head of the Irgun. And these two, Irgun and Stern, were the two most violent, radical terror groups in Palestine in the 1930s and 40s. They were wanted by the British for crimes. This is their protege, Ariel Sharon. So I call these are the terrorist leaders of the Likud. The Likud coalition came to power, as I said, in 1976. They took power in Israel. And when that happened, the Labor Party ceased to be the main power, and these terrorists took power. My girlfriend, who was a kibbutznik from the labor kibbutz, was very sad, and many people were. She said, today, this is the end, this is the death of Israel. This is the day that the terrorists took power. The terrorists have taken over. And I didn't know what she meant, but of course, if you're a Zionist kid and you grew up in Israel, you know more about these guys than the average American. This is the handiwork of the first man, Menachem Begin. In 1946, Menachem Begin, along with David Ben-Gurion of the Haganah, and members of the Jewish Agency, bombed the King David Hotel, which was the luxury hotel in Jerusalem, which also happened to be headquarters of the British Mandate. The British military forces, their headquarters were in there. Now, there's a similarity with 9/11 because the British had conducted an operation called Operation Black Sabbath when they had gone throughout Palestine and arrested a lot of these terror leaders, and they had collected a lot of evidence. And the evidence indicated that the Jewish Agency was involved in the terrorism in Palestine. That's a very big piece of information. Well, that led to why did they bomb this? You know, conventional wisdom is that they bombed this to kick the British out of Palestine. No. They bombed this because the evidence of the Zionist crimes was in this building. And by destroying the building, you destroyed the evidence. Very similar to what happened on 9/11. Because that building 6 I showed you, that held the evidence of crimes like Enron, gold scandals, huge crimes that were being prosecuted. But when the evidence was destroyed, as in Building 6, the vault that was below Building 6 was the vault for Building 6 and Building 7, U.S. Customs House and that whole Building 7. All the evidence and gold was in that vault. But what they found, what Kurt Sonnenfeld found, the videographer from the FEMA, he found that when he got down to the basement of Building 6, that the vault had been cleaned out the night before, which is why you have this incredible explosion. Somebody either sent a missile into that building or put a shaped charge in the basement of that building and blew it up in an attempt to destroy the evidence that they had robbed the vault the night before. This is the murder of Volker Bernadotte in September 18th, 1948. This was done, as I said, by Yitzhak Shamir, the Stern Gang, also known as Lehi, the Stern Gang. And this was the UN mediator who was sent to Palestine to try and make a livable operation out of the partition plan of Palestine. They partitioned Palestine between Jewish and Palestinian sections, hoping that there would be some peace in the country. And he wanted to implement. He knew that it wasn't going to work, but he also said that they have to have Jerusalem has to be an independent, separate, free state, open to all. And this is the handiwork of Ariel Sharon, the third man in that picture. This is the massacre of the Palestinians in Sabra and Shatila in 1982, in which Palestinian camps in West Beirut were the inhabitants were massacred. Thousands of people were massacred, while the Israeli army secured the area around it and provided flares so they could go on with the massacre at nighttime. Went on for like 2 or 3 days. And anybody who tried to get out of the camps was then shot by the Israelis as they tried to leave. This is the man who was found responsible by Israel. The Kahan Commission found him responsible. He lost his portfolio. He lost his position in the Israeli cabinet. He was told that he was unfit to have any leadership positions in the Israeli government. And then in 2001, he got elected as prime minister. And I called my sister, who's Jewish, and told her that this is a very bad constellation. Here we have George Bush, stole the election or whatever. He got elected by the Supreme Court. And this man was in power in Israel. And I said, this is exactly like we had in 1982. And we had Ronald Reagan, who was like a born-again Christian Zionist, along with Menachem Begin. So you had a terrorist leader in Israel, in our ally, with an ideologically committed person in the Republican Party. And it led to the war in Lebanon in 1982. It led to Ronald Reagan sending troops to try and hold the line. So I said, this is not a good combination. George Bush and this fella is not a good combination. And I said, something bad is going to happen. Believe me, these guys are terrorists. This man is what they call a genocidaire. That's a French word meaning he commits genocide. He's done it all of his life. That's what he did all of his life. He killed Palestinians like they were to be slaughtered. This was his assistant, Ehud Olmert, who was the mayor of Jerusalem and became the deputy prime minister under Ariel Sharon. What I discovered was that this man was in New York City on September 11th, although it was not mentioned in the press in New York City. Now, how can that be? The mayor of Jerusalem comes to his sister city, New York City, and it's known to Mayor Giuliani, it's known to the FBI, it's known to the U.S. government, but it's kept out of the New York papers. Why? Why? What was he there for? I found out that he was on September 10th, he was in New York City making a transaction, selling a football team, the Likud football team called Beitar. But he didn't leave. He was there. And we know that on September 11th, at about in the afternoon, the U.S. Defense Department allowed one LL-747 to leave from New York to go to Israel full. When nobody else was allowed to fly, LL got to fly that day. They flew home. The bad guys got away. Here is one of the number one bad guys. This is Benjamin Netanyahu, current Prime Minister of Israel. Now he's running again for office because his government has fallen. His government has fallen, so there's going to be an election on March 17th. So this man and his father had a little group called the Netanyahu Institute, or the Yonatan Institute, where they have been promoting since 1979 this idea that the United States has to engage in a war on terror. And basically go to the Middle East and fight Israel's wars for it. Fight the countries that are attacking Israel, fight the groups that are attacking Israel, and fight the countries that support them, which is exactly what we've been doing since 9/11. So the agenda that he and his father were promoting since 1979, and they had a conference in 1979 in Jerusalem called the Jerusalem Conference, and George Herbert Walker Bush attended and spoke when he was a candidate for vice president. Here is his father, who passed away recently, Benzion Netanyahu. But his real name is, of course, Benzion Milakowski, born in Warsaw, Poland. Here's Mr. Netanyahu here, speaking or visiting the Grand Synagogue of Paris just after the Charlie Hebdo attack last month, it was. And here he came into the Grand Synagogue waving like he was Bruce Springsteen or a rock star. And he's doing this because he desperately wants to win the election March 17th. And there's a good chance that he might not win it. So what's he going to do? What's he going to do to improve his chances? He's going to come and speak before the U.S. Congress, I think, next week. He's going to speak to the U.S. Congress. He's going to Paris. He's promoting himself on the global screen so that the people in Israel will say, oh, Bibi, what a guy. Look it. He goes to Congress and he tells the Americans what to do. Look it. He's great. That's how the average Israeli will think. But to ensure his election, I would submit to you that there's very likely there's going to be some criminal or there's going to be a war. There will be a little war involving Israel and either Lebanon, Syria, Gaza, Hamas, somebody. Because if there's a war in the beginning of March, and if that war goes on until the middle of March, that will greatly enhance his chances of being reelected because people will say, oh, we got to vote for Bibi. We're in the middle of a war. We've got to rally the troops. So I wouldn't be surprised if something... Watch what happens in the Middle East in March. Here he is. Here he is with Ehud Barak, Israel's former defense chief, chief of staff, minister of defense, Israel's most highly decorated soldier. This man, Ehud Barak, was also foreign prime minister. And he was, in the military time, he was the commander of an elite commando force, covert commando force called the Sayeret Matkal. And Netanyahu was his soldier. So he was the commander of this man, along with his brother and some other men. It's a covert commando force, which is directly under the Israeli chief of staff. If you look through the 9/11 saga, you will find Sayeret Matkal people on all the planes. And there's a lot of coincidence that Sayeret Matkal people are on the planes, for example. What's up with that? And this man, Ehud Barak, was on BBC World Television in London. He was in the studio in London before the buildings even fell. He was telling the English-speaking world. This BBC World is seen around the world. It's an English-speaking channel from the BBC TV. And he was telling his audience, or the global audience, exactly what he thought happened on 9/11, before either tower even fell. And he said that what we're seeing today is the result of Osama bin Laden, and we know where Osama bin Laden is. And he said, now is the time. He said, the world will never be the same. He was right about that. He said, the world will never be the same. It will never be the same. He says, but now is the time for America to lead in a concrete, operational war on terror. So, you see, they got the war on terror that they so desperately wanted for the last 20 years through 9/11. So 9/11 kickstarted the Zionist war agenda that they wanted us to do. So now we're fighting Israel's wars for it. And here are the troika of terror. Shimon Peres, president, former president, Bibi Netanyahu, Ehud Barak. They're very happy the way things turned out. In fact, this man, Netanyahu, on 9/11 told the New York Times, when asked, how will this affect Israeli-American relations? He said, it's very good. He said that. It's very good. As the buildings were smoldering with 3,000 people in them, he said it was very good. He said, well, not very good, but it'll be really good for our relations because now you Americans understand what we're up against. And then a couple years later, he said again in Hebrew at an Israeli university called Bar Ilan, he said that Israel is benefiting from one thing. He said that is the attacks on the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and America's struggle in Iraq. For him, that's one thing. Because in his mind, those two things are one. It's a Freudian slip. Now, this man here is Yisr Harel, the former head of Haganah Intelligence, the former chief of the Shin Bet, the founder and the former chief of the Shin Bet, which is Israeli domestic intelligence, and the first real director of the Mossad. He served as director of Mossad for like 13 years. He's a terrorist. He's a bona fide terrorist. But he said something in 1979 to a guy from Texas named Michael D. Evans, a Jewish guy who pretends to be a Christian evangelist. He said that Arab terrorism will come to America. They will attack your tallest building in New York City. This is him, Yisr Harel, born 1912. As I said, he's the founder and director of the intelligence agency Shin Bet, director of Mossad. Predicted in 1979 that Arabs would attack the tallest building in New York City. Okay, 22 years later, that prediction came true. What a wise guy. How did he know that? Here he is later on in life, not so very happy. Here's the man he told it to, Michael D. Evans, Christian Zionist, lives in Texas, supporter of extreme right-wing Zionism. He has a little operation called Jerusalem Prayer Team. You're probably familiar, Christian Zionism is a very big aspect in the evangelical movement in this country. Television evangelists like Hagee, and the 700 Club, and people like that. Their main mission, their main objective is to promote Israel and Jewish immigration to Israel. They're not so concerned about the life and times of Jesus Christ or what that means to us. They're more concerned about serving Israel. Here he is in 1979 with Bibi Netanyahu, who was a furniture salesman at the time, and his father, Benzion Milakovsky, and some unknown female. Here he is with the man who blew up the King David Hotel. Now, it's no secret that this man blew up the King David Hotel, killed 90 people, committed the worst terror atrocity in Middle East history. It's no secret. Everybody knew it. He was wanted by the British. And here's this Christian Zionist, just lovey-dovey with this man. Oh, there's like they're just in love with each other. And because this man is, in fact, he's Jewish. He's really Jewish. But he's also a Zionist, a very dedicated Zionist. Here he's speaking in Caesarea, Israel, along with somebody named Glenn Beck and David Barton. about 2012. And these men are all basically prostitutes for Zionism. I don't know how else you can say it. They are serving the Zionist cause for money. You know, and the Zionists are very generous to people who promote Zionism among the Christian in this country, among Christians in this country, because they gave Mr. Hagee an airplane, I think, and they give these people a lot of money. Okay, here's another guy. This man here in the middle is Arnon Milchan. He is Israel's main Mossad agent in Hollywood. He's also the senior agent of Lechem. Lechem was a super secret Israeli operation to get American nuclear technology to Israel for their nuclear program. It was started by Shimon Peres, and this was Shimon Peres and this guy are best friends. Well, this guy came to Hollywood, and these are basically his property. These people make movies. This is Brent Pitt and Angelina Jolie, and he makes movies in which these people are star. And he made movies like JFK, in which, of course, who's the guilty party? Some nebulous group at the CIA. He made Brazil, another movie where bombs go off all the time without making any sense. A futuristic film. Bombs go off here, bombs go off there. Terrorism is a fact of life. Very much like Iraq has become. Like Iraq has been for the last 10, 13 years. Bombs go off here, bombs go off at funerals, bombs go off in restaurants. Here he is with his two of his big friends, Shimon Peres, who he calls his best friend, and Bibi Netanyahu. He made a movie in 1978 in England, France and England, called The Medusa Touch. And in this movie, the climactic scene is a 747 flying into the Pan Am building. And this is how they're arranging the props to make this scene possible for their movie. Here's the book. Peter Van Greenway, don't let the name fool you. This man is actually a Jewish writer. The publisher is a Jewish publisher. And as we know, the man who made the movie is a Mossad agent. And Richard Burton, I haven't seen watched the movie too closely myself, but my friend down in Seguin watched it the other night, and he said that the symbolism in this movie is very interesting. He said, I'm dying to watch it now that he's told me about this, but it's a lot of anti-Christian symbolism in the movie. But Richard Burton says, I am the man with the power to create catastrophe. Because Richard Burton has this sort of telekinesis power where he imagines something happening and it happens. And churches get blown up, and buildings get blown up, and planes fly into buildings. This is 1978 he made this movie. Then he was involved in another movie made in 2000 in Vancouver, Canada, and in New York City, in which a plane here flies into the World Trade Center. And in the movie, this plane has a passenger flight which has been remotely hijacked by superior computer technology. And then the plane narrowly... Here they're pulling up, and the plane just narrowly misses the World Trade Center. He made this movie, The Lone Gunman. It's a pilot episode of a series by the same title. And in this he made with Rupert Murdoch, because Rupert Murdoch and Arnon Milchan were partners in their TV production company called New Regency. So you ask yourself, which writer had the brilliant idea to fly planes in the World Trade Center? And to make this scene, they actually flew helicopters along the flight path of the plane. This man, Peter Zvi Malkan, is one of the veteran Mossad agents. He was involved in the kidnapping of Eichmann in Argentina. He was involved in the smuggling of plutonium from Pennsylvania for Israel's nuclear bombs. He and a partner of his got the World Trade Center security contract in 1987. And that contract would have gone through had it not been torn up when somebody from the Port Authority discovered that his partner, Avraham Shalom Ben-Dor, was convicted of murder in Israel when he was the head of the Shin Bet, and there had been a bus hijacking in 1984, and they had captured two of the Palestinians alive. And he told this man, Avraham Shalom Ben-Dor, said, just crush their heads with rocks. So that's what they did. They just killed them on the spot. They crushed the Palestinians' heads with rocks and said, oh, they're all done. They're all gone now. And that was there was a process. He was found guilty. He was removed from his position at the Shin Bet. And he came to America. Just like this other guy, this other fellow that I showed you, Zvi Malkan, who was the senior Mossad agent, he supposedly retired from the Mossad at age 49 and came to America to sell art. But as we can see, they didn't stop their operations for Israeli intelligence. They just worked undercover. And here they were working with a man named Rafi Eitan, this man here, who Rafi Eitan was the man who was the head of that operation to get nuclear materials from the United States of America to Israel. And here he is in about the 80s celebrating with Aviram Nir. This is the Israeli Mossad agent who ran Iran-Contra. This man supposedly died in a helicopter crash or a small plane crash in Mexico City while he was shopping for avocados. I don't think he died, but here is the father of Atwell Security. I told you that they tried to get the security contract for the World Trade Center. The company called Atwell Security of Tel Aviv was owned by this man, Shaul Eisenberg, who lived most of his life, adult life, in China. He was a senior Mossad agent for China and Japan. He was their man in Asia. And he is the so-called billionaire who owned Atwell Security. When the Port Authority reneged or negated that contract, the Mossad didn't say, okay, well, just give it up. We can't do this operation. They still needed to get the security contract for the World Trade Center, but they needed to do it through American agents. So they worked through people that were what you would call Sayanim. Sayanim is plural, of American Jews who are willing to do help, to volunteer effort for the Israel. And here we have Jules Krull. He had a company called Krull Associates who got the security contract for the World Trade Center. In 1993, they revamped, after the bombing, the first bombing, they revamped security contract for the World Trade Center, and they then became the people that ran security at the World Trade Center. Now, Jules Krull had a business partner you might know, smiling Hank Greenberg. This is Hank Greenberg. His real name is Maurice. He was the head of AIG. You might have heard that's the company that got $180 billion bailout because they had insured the profits of companies like Goldman Sachs and Bank of America on very dodgy, speculative derivative options. Well, because the Bush administration and the Obamas didn't want to look like they were giving money directly to Goldman Sachs, it went through him. They paid the money. They gave the money to AIG, who then gave the checks to Goldman Sachs and Bank of America for their losses. And what's interesting is that the first plane struck his computer room, the computer room that was run by his son, Marsh McLennan. Marsh McLennan in the North Tower, their data center was the first plane struck that building. So he's involved. He and his partner, Jules Krull, are involved in security at the World Trade Center, and the first plane goes into their secure computer room. What a coincidence. Another one of the Krull associate employees is this man here, Jerome Hauer, who was a former employee of Krull, and he was the director of New York City's Office of Emergency Management from 96 to 2000, where he oversaw the construction of the OEM headquarters on the 23rd floor of Building 7. That's the building that fell. The 23rd floor was a hardened, protected bunker, and that whole building came down, and he was the one who built it there. And these you have to remember, all of these characters I'm showing you, every single one of them is a Zionist Jew. That means that they're Jewish by ethnicity, but they're Zionist by political ideology. Except for Giuliani. He's not. He's a little New York son of a New York mafioso. This man is Rahm Emanuel, who is the current mayor of my hometown, Chicago. He was the senior advisor to Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. He's one of the guys who made Barack Obama. He's also the person who pushed NAFTA through. So if any of you are interested in how we got NAFTA, it was him working in 1993 in the Oval Office, pushing it through. He's a gangster. His father was involved in the murder of Volker Bernadotte. His father, Benjamin Emanuel, was a member of the Lehi, the Stern Gang, who killed that man, Volker Bernadotte. And they came to America like in the early 50s and had their children, and that's him, Rahm Emanuel. And he was the Mossad's main man in the White House during Bill Clinton. And what's important about that is that such a crime takes decades to plan. I told you that the ideas of this crime began in the 1970s. The planning began in the 1970s. That means that during the 1980s and 1990s, you got to get all your ducks in a row. You got to get people in positions of power where when the crime actually happens, every base is covered. That's what he was doing. Here he is working with his good friend, Bill Clinton. He's advisor, senior advisor. And so Bill Clinton would appoint to the bench, for example, the right people. He would appoint the right people to all these various offices because, you know, the president is responsible for thousands and thousands of appointments every year. Somebody has to appoint, the executive has to do it. And, you know, when you understand American politics or politics pretty well, you understand that these people that are the public leaders are really not making decisions on their own. It's their advisors around them who are turning their heads. For example, here we have Barack Obama, here we have David Axelrod and Rahm Emanuel. They're laughing, they're having a good time, they're showing probably a new policy, they're saying this is what you're going to promote now. And they created, these two men created Obama since 1992. In 1992, a woman named Betty Lou Saltzman in Chicago presented Obama to the Jewish community and said, this man, Barack Obama, will be America's first black president. And lo and behold, he was. Betty Lou Saltzman is also the daughter of Philip Morris Klutznik. Her maiden name is Klutznik. And Philip Morris Klutznik is the president of the International Order of B'nai B'rith. He died in 1999. You have to understand, the International Order of B'nai B'rith is a Freemasonic organization which is open only to Zionist Jews. So it means that they have this secret society in America and around the world, which basically is allowed and able to conspire in free societies. Here was the comptroller at the Pentagon. His name is a rabbi, Dov Zakheim. And he was appointed in July 2001. He was also, prior to that, he was the CEO of a company called SPC International, which makes things like remote control operations for planes and things like that. But here he's probably trying to explain, well, I'm looking where that $2 trillion went. I can't tell you right now, but I'll tell you next week. This man, Lou Eisenberg, was the commissioner of the Port Authority. And this man was involved. He was the person, as the commissioner of the Port Authority, he was the person who oversaw the negotiations for the privatization of the World Trade Center. And there were a couple people who wanted to get the World Trade Center. One was Vornado Realty. One was Larry Silverstein. And this man made sure that the contract, that the lease went to Larry Silverstein. So what they did is basically the old trick. They made it very difficult for Vornado. They told Vornado, oh, you're going to have all these back taxes to pay on the buildings. Oh, you're going to have to deal with all this expensive asbestos removal. And finally, Vornado gave up and said, forget about it. We don't want it. Then it went right to Larry Silverstein. This man, Ronald Lauder, he's the son of Estee Lauder. He's a very powerful guy in Israel. They have a school of government at Mossad University, which is called the Interdisciplinary Center in Herzliya. He was the director of New York State's privatization scheme for Governor Pataki. And the privatization scheme is what gave the World Trade Center, what turned the World Trade Center from being New York, New Jersey state property to the property of Larry Silverstein. Yeah. Here's Lauder, David Rockefeller, and George Pataki, and Michael Bloomberg. Michael Bloomberg was the mayor for 12 years after 9/11. This is Larry Silverstein. So when you hear people talk about, like David Icke talking about lizard people, he's a good candidate right here. He was the leaseholder of the World Trade Center in 9/11, a senior Zionist leader, and he was also a personal friend of Bibi Netanyahu. Every Sunday afternoon they spoke on the phone, regardless of where they were. This is his partner in crime, Frank Lowy, a former Israeli commando, the CEO of Westfield Properties, and he is the partner of Larry Silverstein in the World Trade Center. Here are the men that ran the Department of Justice at the time. This is John Ashcroft, the man from Missouri who lost an election to a dead man. And here's his assistant. Like I said, again, this man is the window dressing. This is the real power here. Michael Sheratoff was the assistant attorney general responsible for the criminal investigation of 9/11. As you all know, there was no investigation. The investigation was blocked. The evidence was destroyed. Therefore, this man and this man are culpable for the destruction of evidence at the World Trade Center. So these men would be prime candidates for a trial for the destruction of evidence. Here he is. After he finished that job, he then became the Secretary of Homeland Security, where he was in power for 4 years, from 2005 to 2009. And in that position, he was still in control of the evidence. Here's Philip Zelikow. the executive director of the 9/11 Commission report, which is a myth, which basically gave us the myth and said this is what you're all to believe. A very flawed document, doesn't resemble reality in any way, but it's the myth that we're supposed to believe. And in 1998, that man, Philip Zelikow, wrote this article with Ashton Carter and John Deutsch, who worked for the Rothschilds. Ashton B. Carter and John Deutsch and Philip Zelikow wrote this article, Catastrophic Terrorism, Tackling the New Danger, in which they imagined the transforming event. And they said that such a far-fetched horror is something that could happen next month. And in this article, they basically described what America should have to do when this catastrophic event that could happen next month happens. Now, these two men, as I said, these two men, Ashton B. Carter and John Deutsch, worked for a little group called, Global Technology Partners. It's a group that is a subsidiary, a wholly owned subsidiary of Rothschild North America. So it's a think tank. Ashton B. Carter and John Deutsch, in my main book about original articles, if you look on page 166, there's an article called The Zionist Network Behind 9/11, and I explain their relationship to the Rothschild family. And Philip Zelikow from Houston is the person who specializes in creating the myth and then gave us the myth, because he imagined the transforming event in 1998, and then when the event happened, he gave us the myth. Do you see how that fits together very neatly?
Is Deutsch the former director?
Yes, John Deutsch, former director. Here's Kenneth Feinberg, the Spanish special master of 9/11. We're almost done here. Special master of the 9/11 Compensation Fund. He was appointed by John Ashcroft. And he was the man who doled out the money to the relatives' families who died on 9/11, those who took the government fund in the beginning. For those who didn't, the 96 who didn't, they remained in the process. They remained in the litigation, the tort litigation. They had to deal with this woman, Sheila Birnbaum, who is a lawyer for Skadden Arps. And she worked to try to obtain settlements out of court with those remaining 96 families. What they fought with those 96 families was what I call a judicial war of attrition. They just wanted to grind them down over time, over time, over time, so they fell away from the process. And eventually they all fell away. And this was the judge who oversaw the whole thing. Another Orthodox Jew, Alvin K. Hellerstein, devout Zionist. His son actually is a lawyer in Israel, lives on an illegal settlement on the West Bank. And his son is a lawyer in Tel Aviv and works for a law firm that represents the primary defendant in his father's litigation. In the litigation this man was overseeing in New York City, the main defendant was an Israeli company called ICTS, based in Holland. They do airport security and passenger screening. And they were doing the passenger screening operations at Boston's Logan Airport, for example, that day. And his son is working for a law firm that represents ICTS, while his daddy in New York City is overseeing the litigation in which that company is the main defendant. Surprise, surprise, that this man told the Israeli company, oh, you can leave. Summarily dismissed ICTS from litigation, saying, well, you're just the parent company. I don't see why you're here. You can go home. Of course, there was no trial. And this is the last slide. This is the last slide. All this shows you, it's kind of fine print, but it shows you all the key positions that are held by Zionist Jews in all those necessary control points that I talked about. So this shows you that, you know, the people who designed the terror, the people who fabricated the weapons, the people who installed the weapons, the people who did all this airport security, had access to the buildings, who promoted the myth, who obstructed the litigation, who prevented the investigation, Michael Chertoff, destruction of evidence, Michael Chertoff again, and the control of the mass media. And here I call something called ideation. That's like what that man made with that film in 1978. He was putting that idea out there that large 747s are going to fly into buildings and cause catastrophic terrorism. But what I'm showing here in this slide is that all of these points in this matrix are held by Zionist Jews. Now, when you have such consistency, it's indeed compelling evidence that your thesis is correct, which is my thesis. So that's all. Now, if you have some questions, we're open for questions. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much.